If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, September 28th, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is LaCroix Poppy himself, a.k.a. my fellow Forbes 30 under 30, a.k.a. Tim Ma-fucking Geddes.
Let Tim host Bless. So excited to be here with you on this beautiful Thursday.
Tim, how are you doing this week? It's been a while.
It's been a while. Doing real good. You know, last week we had a bunch of guests on Games Daily. They all crushed it, so I didn't get to do the show with you. And then this week, I don't remember what happened, but something happened, and I wasn't on the show with you. But here I am now.
We've just redone the schedule. We're now, it is, on Mondays, it's you and Greg.
That's what it is. Tuesdays, it's me and Greg. I missed that Monday energy, Bless. Yeah. Me and you starting the week off right.
Yeah, we close the week back to back. It's the exciting thing where Thursday I get to host, Friday you get to host, and so you're getting the double dosage, but it's like different flavors of the double dosage.
You guys, really excited. You guys have more of a weekend vibe for sure. So you guys like leading into the weekend, that's a good idea right there for sure.
And honestly, Thursdays, I'll say, is usually a decent news day, right? Yeah. I feel like Mondays, you sometimes get great news, but then other times it's like, all right, people are just like getting their gears turning to then break the news on Tuesday. I feel like Thursdays, we get like a nice medium to maybe exciting news day. And then on Friday, we're just kicking it, hanging out, having a good time because it's Friday.
Mondays are usually like the best news days, but not because of the news on Monday. It's like all of the news that we didn't get to cover from Friday afternoon on. And the problem is, though, that usually if news drops on the weekend, it's rarely good news.
Oh,
it's usually shenanigans going on that need to be talked about and exposed
To
the world.
There's a shenanigan going on today that needs to be talked about and exposed to the world. Shenanigans like Google Stadia officially shutting down, PlayStation Stars rewarding you with better customer support, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, in the lead up to the new studio launch, we'll be hosting a Kinda Funny Town Hall today at 11 a.m. Pacific time, right after this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily. We'll go over the upcoming programming changes, Patreon updates, and other exciting things that will go into effect on October 1st. That's happening over on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. And then, speaking of Kinda Funny Games, there is a new Kinda Funny Games cast that is up right now, all about Destiny 2 and whether it's worth jumping back in. That is up on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. And let me tell you, after that episode of Kinda Funny Games, Kinda Funny Games cast, later that night, I did indeed boot up Destiny 2. And I did indeed play with Joey Noel. And we hopped back into I believe it was the Witch Queen campaign. So, hey, it's my Destiny. I'm back in. I'm back. I appreciate it, Tim.
Good.
Thank you to our Patreon producer, Fargo Brady. Today, we're brought to you by NZXT and Uplift, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 9 stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our number 1, Google is shutting down Stadia. I'm reading from Jay Peters and Alex Kranz at The Verge. Google is shutting down Stadia, its cloud gaming service. The service will remain live for players until January 18th, 2023. Google will be refunding all Stadia hardware purchased through the Google Store, as well as all the games and add-on content purchased from the Stadia Store. Google expects those refunds will be completed in mid-January. Quote, A few years ago, we also launched a consumer gaming service, Stadia, a Stadia vice president and GM, Phil Harrison, said in a blog post. He continues, and while Stadia's approach to streaming games for consumers was built on a strong technology foundation, it hasn't gained the traction with users that we expected. So we've made the difficult decision to begin winding down our Stadia streaming service, end quote. Employees on the Stadia team will be distributed to other parts of the company. Harrison says Google sees opportunities to apply Stadia's technology to other parts of Google, like YouTube, Google Play, and its AR efforts. And the company also plans to, quote, make it available to our industry partners, which aligns with where we see the future of gaming headed, he wrote. Tim Geddes, I feel like for anyone who can read tea leaves, right? If you're tea leaf literate out there, I feel like you could have seen this one coming, but Tim, now that we're actually reading the official news that Google Stadia is shutting down, how does this hit you?
I mean, yeah, you're right. It's like we all saw it coming, and it was inevitable that at some point this news was going to hit, and we were going to cover it on this very show, and that's what we're doing today, bless. Yes. Google shutting down Stadia, not a surprise. Giving refunds to all the people just purchased through Google Store, I imagine it'd be impossible to do that across every store and all that stuff, but that's good. That's potentially losing them a lot of money, right?
Pretty much all investment. The revenue, most of the revenue, I imagine, that they made from Google Stadia, they're probably losing by giving those refunds.
I mean, it is only refunds for the Google Store purchases, so I wonder, like, you got to think how many people are actually even gonna do the refund, and then on top of that, like, it is just a limited pool of the people, but how many people bought Stadia to begin with? I imagine most of the Stadia install base got the system, maybe not install base. Yeah, I guess it still would be install base, even if you're not playing the thing. I feel like most people that have Stadia got it from some type of deal where it was like, oh, you get this thing free, or like, hey, for $10 more, if you're buying this other Google Home shit, you get this, because like they were just legitimately giving them away for so long. But yeah, not surprising to get here, but I will say it's a bummer. I think that what they were doing is very important for video games and for the future of technology and all this. Somebody had to be first. It was Google, and they definitely did not do it right. But they set the stage for what we've seen with Nvidia, with the GeForce Now, and what we've seen with xCloud and everything that Microsoft's doing. And I think that it's important for people to push these boundaries and to try to get the infrastructure there. And out of all people, it should have been Google to make it work, but it wasn't their time. So now hopefully this tech can be shared around and used for creating opportunities that can get it right when it is ready, and when the infrastructure is there for everyone to be able to play and have the internet quality that we have here in the Bay Area. I just read an article yesterday talking about how the Google Fiber tests have been going extremely well. And like, even in parts of Kansas, they're getting upwards of 10 gig up, 10 gig down. And it's like, Jesus. If we can just get that going everywhere, that would be game over. And it would just allow so much more to be done tech-wise. And, you know, the work that the Stadia team did is going to be built on eventually. But sad to see this happen. But, yeah, it was inevitable.
I want to bring in this question from Nano. Of course, Nano wrote in at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, Stadia is officially dead. Gone, but not forgotten. It's going to the big cloud databank in the sky. My question is, even though we all kind of saw this coming, given Google's track record, what could they have done differently to have made Stadia a success? Was this doomed from the start all the way to now, seeing as how it was still missing promised launch features like YouTube save integration? Thanks, Nano. And for me, my answer to this starts from that last part of, hey, if it launched and worked as intended and as advertised, I think we could maybe be seeing a different story for Stadia. Because I remember that launch stream they did, right? That event where it was them giving you the pitch. Hey, this is what Google Stadia is. This is what is exciting about it. And some of the things they pitched was that YouTube stuff, right? Of, hey, you could be watching your favorite YouTuber playing a game and then click a button and all of a sudden you're picking up from their save and you are going and you're going ahead with it. You could be watching a trailer for a video game and all of a sudden click one button and immediately you're playing a demo for that video game. I don't think any of that stuff came to fruition in a way that at the very least made it exciting and accessible in the way that I think one of the promises of Stadia was the accessibility of it. Hey, it's on your Chrome browser. Hey, you can start up a game in 2 seconds and be in it, right? I don't think that worked as intended. I also remember one of the things that they talked about being the fact that, hey, Google Stadia, we're not limited by a box, right? We're not just a console sitting in your home. In fact, Google Stadia is as powerful as five Xbox Ones smushed together. I don't know if that was the exact verbiage of it, but it was something along the lines of,
I think
of,
you
like,
nailed it, actually, word for word, yeah.
Yeah, like you tape together five Xbox Ones, boom, that's Google Stadia, and it's going to be that powerful. I don't think we ever saw the promise of what the power of Google Stadia could have been, given that these are games running off of a server farm somewhere in California. You know, I would have loved to see a Stadia exclusive that looked like a PlayStation 6 game or even a PlayStation 5 game for that matter. But we never got something that was of that ilk, because when you're talking about Google Stadia and when you're talking about the realities of game development, devs don't want to make something exclusive to a platform that doesn't have a great install base. You know, like Cyberpunk, let me not use Cyberpunk as an example. The next Assassin's Creed game is going to come out on Xbox and PlayStation, right? And so with that being the case, are you going to put in all this extra development to make the Google Stadia version shine in all these crazy, extravagant ways? No, you're just going to port it to Stadia the way it looked on PlayStation and Xbox, because that's where the install base is, right? The install base is on PlayStation, Xbox, PC, and these other platforms. And so I don't think we ever saw the power of Stadia get pushed in that way. And I don't even know if it could have, right? I don't think we ever got the answer of, hey, is it really that strong? Like, could we really take it there? Nobody really, correct me if I'm wrong, nobody really tested that. And I think seeing that promise maybe would have pushed the bar a little bit in terms of people actually being a bit interested in what Stadia had to offer. I think for me, not seeing that promise is a big part of why Google Stadia didn't take off. And then on the other hand, also, the fact that it wasn't a subscription service. You know, having to buy games piecemeal on Stadia, I think, was the wrong move, especially given to what you're seeing right now with some of these streaming services, right? You look at Xbox xCloud, and xCloud is working off of Game Pass, and guess what? The promise of being able to, let's say, open my phone or open my Samsung smart TV, if it's at least the 2022 version, being able to open the xCloud app, scroll through this library of games that I already own, and being able to jump in from my save that's already on my console, that right there is huge. And Google Stadia didn't have that, right? Buying games piecemeal for Google Stadia, I think, was just not the move for it either. But Tim, like, do you think there's anything Google Stadia could have done to become more successful?
Yeah, when it comes to these type of things, it's always a combination of, in my opinion, two of the most important factors. One being, what's your story? And one being, how are you meeting the audience where they are? And I feel like both of those things need to align and be an exciting proposition in order for people to actually want to make a move and purchase the product, to be a part of the ecosystem and all of that. And I think that Google had the story of, hey, we're trying to do something different. It's going to be cloud-based gaming. Other companies have done it before, tried it before with things like OnLive or GOG in different ways. But they're like, we're Google. This is how we're going to do it. But I think where they made the mistake was they had the story down, but the meeting the people where they were, they totally fumbled. Mm-hmm. I think that they went a little too hard, even with the amount of promises and the amount of features they were showing off, of like the watching a YouTube video, being able to play right away. Anytime you see a feature that you're like, that's kind of cool, but like, I would never, ever, ever do that. That's not great, because that's showing that like you're speaking to the gamers, and the gamers are like, huh, you're adding extra features that we're not asking for. And it reminds me a lot of like looking at the PlayStation, and it's like, all right, we want folders. And instead they're like, yeah, well, you're getting stars. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Things like that, where it's like, I know it's not one-to-one, but it feels that way. And I think that when your launch proposition is more bells and whistles than it is the actual functionality. And yeah, in this case it is, oh, so you're telling me if I buy Assassin's Creed on whatever system, I can play it on Stadia? No. That's not what you're telling me. Oh, okay. It's not a subscription service. Oh, it's not what would make sense if you didn't know what this was and someone tried explaining it to you for the first time. That's not good. You know what I mean? It's like, people should understand what it is after they get the pitch. So I think that that's kind of where they made their first major misstep in terms of marketing Stadia. And then I just think that the world evolved so quickly. Like, to look back to when Stadia launched in whatever it was, 2016, 17, and then to look at where we've gotten in the last 5 years, just talking about cloud-based stuff, just talking about subscription-based things. Look at Game Pass now compared to Game Pass then. Right? Like, been so many advancements, and you add on xCloud on top of that and all that. It's like Microsoft is doing what I just said, which is they have the story and they are meeting the audience where they're at and giving them a product that's going to work how they expect it to work.
Oh yeah, I mean even PlayStation Now, right? Like PlayStation Now is another service that has had a marketing problem and has had issues getting off the ground. But and I think that a lot of that has been fixed quite a bit with the revamp of PlayStation Plus and all that. But even PlayStation Now back then at least had a better idea of where the space needed to be than what where Google Stadia started at. Because now was before Stadia, and now had the subscription service type thing of, hey, here's a library of games. A lot of that was, a lot of the library I don't think was worthwhile. And I think a lot of the sales pitch of PlayStation Now, again, wasn't worthwhile and the cost of it and all that stuff. But at least they're on the right track in a way that I feel like Google Stadia could have looked at to some degree and went, okay, no, this is what we need to do. We need to figure out how to make this about the monthly subscriptions or the yearlies or whatever, right? As opposed to the piecemeal of it. And yeah, Tim, I think you're 100% right in terms of meeting people where they're at, right? And the features being more about the quality of the features rather than quantity and like throwing in just random features that people aren't asking for. Because we're gonna get into PlayStation Stars in a second, but yeah, it reminds me a lot of PlayStation Stars where you read the feature list of Stadia and I'm like, all right, but do I need this? Do I want to use this? Like, I look at Amazon Luna, even Couch, I'm like, yeah, okay, Couch is cool. Couch is a novel thing that that even on our streams, I've been somewhat impressed by. I look at NVIDIA GeForce Now, and a lot of people have had really good things to say about GeForce Now. I feel like every other streaming service has had at least some tidbit where I'm like, okay, you know, at least this is something that I feel like is valuable to the space. Whereas Stadia, I don't think had much of that. Stadia felt like it was another Google project that they just wanted to throw out there because they had a vision that wasn't fully fleshed, but they're Google and they have the technology to do it. So let's try it out because we have the means to do it, but not fully flesh it out.
And this reminds me a lot of Steam, where in 2011, 2012, something like that, Steam was like, we're going to do Steam machines. You're going to be able to have a PC that you can hook up to a TV and have Steam in your living room. And that's a perfect example of it didn't work out. It didn't catch on to the mainstream that they were trying to, or mainstream of gaming that they were trying to reach, because the gaming PC ecosystem wasn't ready to support that essentially back then. Whereas now it's a very different thing when people think of Steam. Indies are just as important as anything else, but people are also playing all those other games. So then the Steam Deck comes along, and that actually has a proposition that is meeting gamers where they're at in a world where people understand what the Switch is, and it is speaking loud and clear to a core audience of, you want to play these indies and some AAA games in bed when you're just not at your computer, you're not at your living room, doesn't matter. And they spoke loudly to that audience, and now everyone that has one loves it.
Yeah, I got one. Let me tell you, I played so many hours of Inscription in bed this last weekend, and it was fantastic. And I could not recommend the Steam Deck enough. But Tim, earlier I said we'll talk about PlayStation Stars in a second. Let's talk about PlayStation Stars right now. Story number two, PlayStation Stars loyalty program currently offers better customer service as a reward. This comes from Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Sony's PlayStation Stars loyalty program is offering better customer support to those at a higher reward tier. As reported by VGC, those using the service after its launch in Japan today, September 29th, have complained that those on the customer services fourth tier get improved customer support. Users can move up tiers by buying games from the PlayStation Store and earning trophies, effectively meaning that those with more money will receive better support from Sony. Quote, when contacting PlayStation customer support, you will be given priority in the chat order, the reward list reads, and getting there requires users to first buy 4 games from the PlayStation Store and earned 128 rare trophies. Those who've done so will therefore be able to speak with PlayStation's customer support ahead of those who've spent less money, something that has some users upset. It's not guaranteed that this PlayStation Stars reward will arrive with the North American, European, and other versions of the service, but Sony hasn't indicated that anything will be different between regions. The reward program will also give players the likes of PlayStation Store wallet funds and select PlayStation Store products, alongside a series of virtual collectibles. Tim, we did it. All right. Me and you, the PlayStation faithful, the Greg Millers out there. If we have a PlayStation problem, we get the direct call of customer support. These brokies out here get to fucking struggle with their PlayStation 5 gets the yellow light of death. Good fucking luck out there. I'm first in line.
Yeah. Yeah. This is such a misstep that didn't need to happen, and I'm sure they are kicking themselves like, oh, this just does not sound good when you talk about it. Like, and this is such a perfect example of like best laid plans. Like, they meant for this to be a nice cool thing to make people happy, and it's like, oh man, it's gonna upset a lot of people. A thing to keep in mind, They're it's better customer service as a war. Technically, it's just quicker customer service, you know?
I mean, some might say it's the same thing. Quicker is better.
That's a good call there. But I don't know. PlayStation Stars, man. It probably should have baked a little bit longer before getting taken out of the oven. You know, it's like, this is the type of thing of, I don't think we've ever talked about PlayStation Stars and not started from a place of snark, right? It's they've never given us any reason to like have anything positive to say. So when things like this happen, it's just like, oh God, y'all kind of fucked up.
Ronald in the YouTube chat says, Brokey's callback later. And I love the idea of like some just regular PlayStation 5 user out there calling PlayStation being like, hey man, my DualSense, it has the drift. I've heard this is a problem. Can you help me play? And then like the person on the other line being like, hey, hold on, I gotta put you on hold. The 1% of the PlayStation owners, they're on the line. I gotta give them priority. And so get your money up while I take this other call, and then hanging up the phone on them. Good on you, PlayStation Stars. I want PlayStation Stars to be good.
Why wouldn't you?
Like, a great version of PlayStation Stars would be hype as hell. Are you kidding me? Like a reward system that is, hey, you get for the more trophies you get, for the more games you play, you can get really cool. The term digital collectible isn't fun, but if it was like a PlayStation Home, like you are decorating apartment, or even a profile picture, or like something to display on your profile for your friends to see, right? Like, I think there could be promise there, or even like discounts on games for the amount of platinums you get. Stuff like that is exciting. Stuff like that, I think, can be cool. It's just every single feature they talk about goes back to our Stadia thing of, hey, is this a quality feature? Is this something that is actually meeting the audience in a place where they want to be? Is this something that they want to do? Or is it something that you're adding in just to say, hey, you have all these features that you can stack up that, you know, might be worthwhile because of the amount of them, but in reality aren't worthwhile. It's upsetting. It's upsetting. I wish it was better.
Yeah, I wish it was better too. And like, this is one of those examples of, this is normal. Like, so many different companies do things like this with loyalty programs where you get to skip the line because you support more in whatever way. And so it's like, I don't think it's that weird. It's just more of like, you need wins for things to not be weird, unless you're airlines and you just don't give a shit and you just keep charging more for things that you used to not charge for. But
it sounds like a very specific thing you're referencing here.
Oh, I mean, it's a million specific things, but like, back in my day, you didn't need to pay for every single bag you're bringing on. Like, United now these days are like, hey man, no, you got to pay extra just to actually get a seat. Otherwise, you have to stand there the whole time. But with PlayStation, it's like, I feel like they need to at least have something exciting about Stars. There has to be one thing that makes us go, all right, I like that. Right now, they don't have that. You just get these NFTs that are actually fungible.
These fun the FTs, they're just
you don't want FTs. You don't want the fungible tokens of this PS3.
I don't know, man. I got them in Astro.
That's the thing, is like, in some context, yeah, in the context of Astro, for sure, give me the fungible PS3, because it's cool, because I get to like play as Astro and hop all over the PS3 and then like press the button and it like pops out and I get a trophy. Like, There are contexts in which give me fungible fucking images or whatever, like, you know, these cool digital collectibles, I think can be fun and can be exciting. It's just the way in which they're, the context in which they're presenting it. I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm going to earn this digital thing of a PS3 that's going to be in a menu somewhere that a friend can maybe like click over to my profile and then search for it and then see that I got a PS3. All right, cool. I don't know. There are so many better ways to do this, and I'm kind of waiting on the exciting elements of it. But maybe it's a learning thing, right? Maybe it is like a lot of PlayStation things. Honestly, you start from ground zero and go, cool, launch it, and then we'll figure out the cool shit later.
Figure it out.
Yeah, because that's what PlayStation does. You know, they put out the PS5. Guess what? The PS5 doesn't have folders. And then a year later, they're like, hey, here's this thing that kind of resembles folders that isn't folders. We'll get folders eventually, but for now, let's do this, right? Here's not in themes. You'll get themes in year 4 of the PS5, maybe. You know, that's what PlayStation does, and maybe they'll do that with PlayStation Stars too. But I digress. Let's hop in to story number 3. Saudi Arabia says it'll spend $13 billion to acquire a leading game publisher. This is Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Saudi Arabia will invest a further $37.8 billion in the games industry, including around $13 billion to acquire a, quote, leading game publisher, end quote, according to State News. The investments will reportedly be made via the country's Savvy Games Group, which is owned by sovereign wealth fund PIF, as it aims to become a global hub for gaming, a state news agency SPA said on Thursday via Reuters. The investments will reportedly include 70 billion reals to take minority stake in several key companies that support Savvy's game development agenda, and 50 billion reals to acquire a, quote, leading game publisher to become a strategic development partner, end quote. PIF, which is a sovereign wealth fund chaired by Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, has invested in numerous game developers in recent years. That includes this year's purchase of a 5.01% stake in Nintendo, which Nintendo subsequently claimed it first learned from, or subsequently first claimed it first learned from, about from news reports, and then 5% stakes in Capcom and Nexon, and billions invested in stock for Activision Blizzard, Electronic Arts, Embracer, and Take-Two. Saudi Arabia officials have said the investments will help modernize the kingdom, but they have come with a negative fallout due to the country's highly criticized human rights abuses. Tim, $13 billion to acquire a leading game publisher.
Anytime you start talking about numbers that involve like multiple tens of billions, because they're talking here about a further $37.8 billion, you know something shady's going on. Like that, once the numbers get that high, you're like, what the hell is going on here? And anytime Saudi Arabia comes up, there's also that starting point of like, when's this going to get bad? You know? And I feel like combining that with the numbers that we're talking about, it's like, all right, it's going to get bad sooner than later, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, $13 billion, that's not, obviously, that's not a small amount of money, right? Like when you say $13 billion, like to put it in context, the Microsoft Activision Blizzard acquisition, that was somewhere in like the 60 billions, right? Like a $69 billion. Nice. And so when you're talking about $13 billion, listen, I'm not an analyst, but that sounds like Ubisoft money to me. You know, that sounds like that tier of publisher money to me. So I'm like, oh man, who's about to get acquired by Saudi Arabia here? And what is that going to do to that publisher? Or if does anything change to that publisher? Because they did acquire SNK, and that was what, at the top of the year. Nothing much has happened with SNK yet. But yeah, I don't know. It's always a fascinating thing to follow because stories like this don't happen that much in the games industry, right? Like obviously acquisitions happen, all that stuff, but it's never really like a specific country is like, yo, we're taking over. Like we want to now have a big presence in the games industry. So we're going to buy up all these things. We're going to buy SNK. We're going to invest in Nintendo. And so I'm curious to see if the ramifications of this are things that actually change the ways in which these companies operate, or if it's purely a, oh man, you know, Saudi Arabia and specifically, I've already forgotten his name, somewhere in this article, Mohammed bin Salman, right? Like he is related to human rights stuff, right? He's the one that got, I believe a reporter essentially murdered. And like having that
beheaded specifically.
Beheaded. Yeah. And having that be connected to, oh yeah, by the way, he owns SNK, he owns all this stake in all these video game companies. There's like a just in that alone, that again, I don't know what to do with a lot of this, right? Like this is real world news that spans beyond what we usually get to cover on Kind of Funny Games Daily. And that throws in a lot of like murky waters in there, right? And grayer areas in there of like what can I support, what can I not support.
No.
But it's one to keep an eye on at the very least.
I mean, definitely, because $13 billion, like you're right, they're talking a leading game publisher. There aren't many leading game publishers that $13 billion sounds right for. And it is the big dogs, right? And there aren't that many big dogs left because they all keep eating each other. So
yeah,
we'll keep an eye on this one for sure.
And Tim, I'm going to do something I usually don't do on this show. And I'm going to mute the notifications from Slack because let me tell you, I've been getting hella slacks from the PSLW Slack channel. Greg is trying to figure out the topic of the show. If I seem distracted, it's because there's left and right in my ears is the, yeah, the like that triple sound from Slack. And so I'm muting that. And as I do that, I want to take you guys on a journey to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can go and get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to NZXT Canvas Gaming Monitors. We are huge fans of NZXT here at Kinda Funny. And I gotta say, these monitors, they're Andy Cortez approved, Kevin Coelho approved, and Tim Geddes approved because of their sweet 1440p resolution with 165 hertz refresh rate and 1 millisecond response hits. That sweet spot for gamers due to the balance of picture and performance. They're available in 27 inch and 32 inch curved displays, variable refresh rate support for all of the major GPUs. They provide an excellent gaming experience for any game genre. You can get the monitor just alone, you can get it with a stand, or you can get it with some pretty cool mounts. There's built-in software support with NZXT Cam that lets you control all your monitor settings directly on your PC. No need to mess with the clunky hardware menus to lock in your desired settings. They thought of it all. It's sold exclusively on NZXT.com. You can learn more about the NZXT Canvas gaming monitors at NZXT.co/kindoffunny. That's nzxt.co/kindafunny.
Shout out to Uplift for sponsoring this episode. I've been using my Uplift desk for well over a year now. I love the thing so much, I decided to write a rap song for them.
The build quality is real good. It's made of real high quality wood.
They didn't ask for it, I just did it anyway. Getting my Uplift desk immediately improved my mood. Whenever I'm on shows, I'm standing up, I'm feeling a lot more energetic. And also, I kind of feel like I was just maybe creating some bad habits sitting down at a desk all day. I would move my legs up, I'd sit underneath my legs on my chair, and eventually all that stuff just created really bad back pain for me. Choose from laminate, whiteboard, bamboo, solid wood, butcher block, or even custom solid wood or laminate options. Uplift Desk won New York Times Wirecutter's Best Standing Desk from 2019 to 2022. And while I'm at it, I'm just going to give them an award as well. Best standing desk that I use in my bedroom from when they sent it to me until now. Uplift Desk have a 15-year warranty. They ship the same day you order with free shipping and free return shipping. So if you've been feeling the effects of sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day, maybe you want some more energy in your life. Maybe you want to do squats in the middle of a Zoom call or something. Uplift your life. Go to kindoffunny.com/uplift.
Tim, I clicked mute on the Slack channel, on the PSN Slack channel. And when I did that, the channel just disappeared from my entire Slack. So I don't know what that's about, but you know, I might need to ask you for help after this episode. To
figure out not me.
You're not a part of PS I Love You anymore. That's how that works.
Oh, no. I just deleted myself from the show. Oh, unfortunate. I'll just rest this afternoon. Story number four, Sackboy, A Big Adventure is coming to PC next month. This is Ryan Leston at IGN. A leak has confirmed PlayStation exclusive Sackboy A Big Adventure is coming to PC on October 27th, 2020. This is 2023. It says next month in the title. I'm going to assume they meant 2022 here. According to an official trailer, which seems to have published early by Sony's Latin America YouTube account, the recent Sackboy game will be headed to PC next month after previously only being available on PS4 and PS5. The trailer also confirms that the PC version of Sackboy Big Adventure will support 4K, 120fps, 21x9 ultra-wide monitors, NVIDIA DLSS, and VRR. An official announcement is likely to be on its way soon. And very soon after they posted this story, let me tell you, the official announcement came. On Twitter, PlayStation announced that Sackboy Big Adventure is coming to PC on October 27th, and then they post the trailer with all the details in there. But hell yeah, we did it.
We did it, man. I love this. I love PlayStation games coming to PC. I love that it's getting all the way, quote unquote, down to Sackboy.
How fucking dare you? But Sackboy's a launch gem.
All the way up to Miles Morales and Spider-Man, which I honestly never thought we were going to get on PC. I'm very impressed that they actually pulled that off. And I think that it shows that they are really trying to get their entire library and any games they have access over there. We'll get Bloodborne one day, Andy. Don't worry.
I don't think we will.
I don't know how. Oh, we will. We will.
This goes back to the NVIDIA leak. Sackboy Big Adventure was one of the ones that was prominent on that leak. Bloodborne, nowhere to be found on that leak.
But I mean, Miles Morales wasn't on the leak either.
That's Andy's argument, right? Because it's not on the leak, that means it's not just getting a port, it's getting a full-on remake.
Yeah, which I still think is insane, but also, you know, like, maybe there's something there. Maybe we could get some like director's cut or something. Maybe it isn't just a Bloodborne port to PC. But yeah, I mean, my other thing too is like, there's not proof of the PC aspect of it. I think now if we do get a Bloodborne re-release or like read something of some sort, they're gonna release it PlayStation exclusive first. We're not getting the PC version until 1 or 2 years after that. That's the way PlayStation works.
Yeah,
they're mad people over there.
They are, but I love that they're clearly focusing on this stuff. We have Uncharted coming out soon-ish, right? So like that's exciting as well. But good for them. actually making sure that the PC stuff's working the way that it should with DLSS, VRR, all that. Like, good for them.
Hell yeah. Tim, that's not all for PlayStation PC news. Story number five. Speaking of PlayStation PC games, Returnal for PC seemingly leaks again and includes DLSS and Ray Trace Shadows. This is Kat Bailey at IGN. Footage of Returnal on PC appeared to leak earlier today, seemingly confirming that Housemarque's roguelite will be joining Sony's other first-party releases on the platform. The leaked footage first appeared on Icon Era after being uploaded to YouTube, showing off the options and customization of the PC version, including ray trace shadows, reflections, DLSS, and FSR. The footage was pulled by Sony not long after. Assuming the footage is real, it shows that Returnal will receive significant enhancements over the PS5 release, which favored frame rate over pure visual fidelity. Sony has yet to officially announce a PC version of Returnal, but it seems very likely given the recent pipeline that includes Spider-Man, God of War, and Horizon Zero Dawn, and also the fact that I'm pretty sure Returnal is also on the NVIDIA leaks as well. And so we're going to get this, and it's a matter of time before we get this. It's just a matter of like when PlayStation is going to finally talk about it and finally actually give us a release date. But this is another exciting one.
I have two things to say about this. One, I can't imagine how many heads Andy Cortez is going to click in this. Can you fucking imagine him? He's going to return his little ass off. Oh my
God, yeah. He's going to
second off
like crazy.
I'm shocked that we haven't already seen Andy Cortez click heads in this, because I could have sworn this already happened. I could have sworn that this the Returnal came to PC earlier this year, but I guess that was just DLC.
There was the
co-op
DLC.
Yeah, that
came out earlier this year, the Returnal Ascension. And then also, it has been leaking like crazy. Like, with the amount of Returnal PC leaks, you would have thought that it came to PC already.
Yeah, definitely did.
And honestly, it's an exciting time where that's where I'm at with the PlayStation stuff, where
you just expect it's there.
When you said Uncharted, I was like, Uncharted's already on PC, right? And I thought about it, I'm like, wait, maybe it's not on PC. Like, maybe it just came to consoles.
No, they announced it for PC, and then, but it didn't share the same release date as the PS5. I think it's coming out within the next month, though.
That sounds about right. We got God of War for PC at the top of the year. What happened was, I think Uncharted Legacy of Thieves Collection, whatever, came out in January, and also God of War PC came out in January, both in the same month, and so you kind of conflate the two. But hell yeah, I love that PlayStation's doing this. I love that we're seeing more of these games on PC, especially for the Andy Cortezes of the world out there that want to just click heads in these games. Good on you. And also for the Miis of the world who want to replay some of these games on Steam Deck like it did for God of War 2018. Let me tell you, that was a great way to do it. I didn't wipe my Steam Deck before I showed it to the camera. I'm sorry, everybody. Let me wipe it real quick.
I see all your thumbprints on it.
Thumbprints. I know those people get mad. It's a touchscreen, guys. I'm gonna touch the screen.
Touch it, dude.
I don't like it. Still has the things on there. I don't like using it for the Switch either. It freaks me out.
You don't?
Yeah, no.
You're not playing all those.
Then I see my thumbprints on it, and it's gross.
Yeah, but that's what it's for, though. Why would they make it a touchscreen if they don't want you to touch it?
I've been playing Mario Brothers 5, Blast.
Yeah? Oh, man, I was thinking about... I almost beat it up last night because I started watching Dahmer. And I was like, I need some levity while I'm watching this show. So maybe I should play Super Mario Brothers 5 while I'm watching Dahmer. And then there was a Slack from Joy being like, hey, I'm on Destiny. And I was like, oh.
I re-downloaded Mario Maker 2 yesterday. I didn't have time to load Super Mario Brothers 5 into it, but it's downloaded, Tim. I'm excited to get into it.
It's a lot of fun.
As a heads up, Breer, because I didn't realize this until it was too late, you can't download the world. It upset me. You have to just play it online. And so you don't really got to prep anything. I don't know. Because you can download levels, right, in Mario Maker.
You just can't download the like world collections. Like it as a game, you can't do, which is really...
Which is dumb.
Can you at least favorite it or something? So I'm not like having to search for it every time. Okay, that's fine.
But the UI is a little bit confusing because when I favorited it, it seemed like I was favoriting the creator. So I honestly don't know if I favorited it or not. But I know I have access to it. And so there's that. But it is, from the little bit of it I played, pretty good. Pretty good. My one critique with it so far is that the levels are a little bit long in the first couple worlds. I'm like,
oh, I love it though.
Really? Because I associate Mario with the shorter levels. I like shorter level Mario. I'm a Mario 3 boy.
Yeah, but this fixed the problems.
Tim talking about Super Mario Brothers 5 makes it seem like he's high as hell right now. Just, I love it, bro.
I love it.
He's high on that good content, man.
Is that good?
That good. That is Super Mario Brothers 5. Speaking of good, Limited Run, they got some of that good. They're publishing books now. This comes from Ollie Reynolds at Nintendo Life.
Who are they?
They being Jared Petty and Jeremy Parrish. Limited Run Games has announced that it has launched a book publishing imprint called Press Run, which aims to bring gaming-related books to the masses, including retrospectives, encyclopedias, and more. Led by gaming experts Jeremy Parrish of 1UP Network, US Gamer, IGN, and Retronauts, and then Jared Petty, formerly of IGN, Kinda Funny, and Electronic Arts, Press Run will look to launch at least one book per month, starting today with SNES Works 1991 and Virtual Boy Works from Jeremy Parrish, alongside The History of Sunsoft Volume 1 from Stefan Ganser. Future releases include NES Works 1987 from Jeremy Parrish and PlayStation, a retrospective from the GameSpike crew. I love this.
Yep. This takes me back to the right now.
This takes me back to the boss fight books run, where it was, hey, here's just a bunch of games or a bunch of books named after games you love, and it is writers writing about whatever. And I always love stuff like that. I always buy these books, and then I don't read them. I put them on a coffee table or like a bookshelf that I have, and I let people look at them. Oh, hell yeah, you got one of the boss fight books right there, the Silent Hill 2 book.
Yeah, I only have the finest works around me.
And then you have the Sonic 2 movie physical edition. I one of my biggest regrets is not picking up the Shadow of the Colossus book when I was at Pink Gorilla one time when I still lived in Seattle. I like looked at it and I was like, oh cool, the Shadow of the Colossus book. And for whatever reason, I don't know what brain fart I had, like I just didn't pick it up. Maybe I was poor. Maybe I didn't have the money. But like I looked at it, I was like, oh cool, the Shadow of the Colossus book. And then I went along my business, didn't buy anything. I should have got that Shadow of the Colossus.
That's great. Book. That was written by Nick Suttner, who we had on Gamescast when we reviewed the remake of Shadow of the Colossus.
Hell yeah.
And he came on and talked. It was great.
Hell yeah. Tim, when are you writing a book? Not for you?
Tim, when are
me,
you
me writing? No. Oh man. Man. Come on, bro. Come on, man.
He's too busy playing Super Mario Brothers 5.
I'm playing Mario Brothers I'm 5, sorry. Dude.
I should no, it's all good. Stones and glass houses either.
No, I'll it's all good. One of the first books that I did read, and I read it many times because it was a choose your own adventure book, so I wanted every possible outcome. It was a Super Mario Brothers book, actually, where it was like Luigi trying to find Mario, but it wasn't Mario's missing. It was something different.
Those are my favorite Goosebumps books, the Choose Your Own Adventure ones.
They're cool. They're dope. But yeah, so I have read books before in my life.
As a kid, I really liked reading the series of Unfortunate Events.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that says about me as a kid, that was the only book that I was like, I'll read this. I like this shit.
Yeah. I was a big reader when I was little. And then as I got older, comic books. That's it. I would love to write a book, especially like these type of ones, like the NES Works and all that type of stuff. I don't think I got it in me, though. I don't think I'm the right guy for that. I mean, I love Smash Brothers. I love Amplitude. I love Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. Am I really going to write a book about that? Do I have anything to say that people give a shit about? I don't know.
Hear me out. Spirits by Tim Geddes. It's just a book about spirits.
Yeah.
Your spirit experience. Why spirits are special.
Mm-hmm.
The coolest spirits in Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Get in your bag.
Grinch.
Get into the Grinch theory. I actually explained why it was a valid theory.
That's what it is. That's I want to write an entire book about the Grinch theory and why. Hey, we were this close, everybody.
Friend of the show, Chris Scolian, who works for Video Games Chronicle, he actually writes a lot of video game encyclopedias, and he's in the process, I think, of putting out his N64 encyclopedia, and I'm trying to get my hands on it, because it seems really cool. Like, that is the kind of thing that I'll sit through and, like, read through pages of that, because, like, you know, fiction isn't necessarily my jam. Give me something nonfiction. Give me like when we did the studio visit not too long ago with the whole crew. One of the things I think Greg brought to give to Barrett was like an old school gaming magazine from like 1999 or some shit. And I sat there and I just paged through every single page.
Oh, that's great.
Was that and I was for like, me? Man.
One of them's for you.
One of them.
The one with Darth Maul on it. The game fan issue.
I didn't realize that. Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I paged through all of it. I was like, dude, if I had the time, I'll just sit here and read every single page of this thing. Like, that's the type of shit that I like to read.
Hell yeah.
It's the fucking nerdy ass encyclopedic shit. Give it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Story number 7. Sega has announced its first blockchain game. This comes from Chris Scolian. Speaking of Chris Scolian at VGC. Sega has announced a partnership that will see the development of the first blockchain game using its IP. As reported by 4Gamer, the deal with Japanese blockchain company Double Jump Tokyo will result in the development of a new game based on Sega's popular Sangokushi Taisen series. Sangokushi Taisen is a real-time strategy game which is mostly played in Japanese arcades and sees players collecting physical cards which they can then place on the playing area to make them appear in the game. The new title, which will be developed by Double Jump Tokyo, which Sega lended the use of its IP, will use blockchain technology, but it's not yet made clear as to how this will work, though it may involve using it to record the ownership of each card. All right.
All right. You know,
I ain't got nothing to say about this.
I know. It's legitimately nothing. It is a bummer. And especially, like, our boy doesn't need more losses, bless. You know?
Of course. Our boy being Sonic?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, like, you know, it's a bummer because, like, this is the first step to him. Mm-hmm. To them putting out the Sonic the Hedgehog NFT game, because you know it's coming. Played Forces. We got to create our own Hedgehog and Force. You think right now Sega isn't figuring out the million, maybe the billion-dollar idea of, hey, customizable NFT OCs. Hedgehogs,
OCs, OC NFTs.
That you make yourself and you NFT them yourselves and you get to play as that NFT.
Bless. See, that's how they're going to start. But you know how they're really going to make their millions?
Oh, no.
NFT chows.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, they're gonna fuck up people's days.
You know people are gonna fall for it too. It's upsetting.
Yeah,
it's upsetting. God,
so many divorces are about to happen.
Stop with the blockchains. Stop with the NFTs. I think that's the take.
Mm-hmm.
Story number 8. Xbox Games with Gold is cutting back monthly games. This is Owen S. Good at Polygon. With Xbox 360 games retired from Xbox Live Games with Gold, Microsoft is now offering subscribers just 2 titles per month for Xbox One and later hardware. And if you don't recognize October's titles, well, you're not alone. Next month, Games with Gold will be giving out Windbound and Bomber Crew Deluxe Edition, which I'll pause there and say I have heard of Windbound. That's the Zelda-looking game.
Mm-hmm.
Both Windbound and Bomber Crew Deluxe Edition are Xbox One titles playable on Xbox Series X. Windbound is available from October 1st to October 31st, whereas Bomber Crew is available October 16th through November 15th. In addition to these games, subscribers can still get 3 of September's Games with Gold, Gods Will Fall for Xbox One, and Portal 2 for Xbox 360 until September 30th, and Double Kick Heroes for Xbox One until October 15th. All right.
Portal 2, man. What a game.
What a dude, I know you saw the Portal 1, the remaster.
RTX.
Yeah, the RTX remaster that they're putting out. I love that. I'm gonna play the hell out of that.
It's like Portal's the game that I play once every couple years, and I think that it is officially the longest I've went without replaying Portal 1. So this is perfect timing.
Yeah, Portal 1 is in that, it's in the Mirror's Edge camp for me, where you put out a release of it, I'm gonna play it. Like Mirror's Edge on any new console I'm getting, if I can pick up Mirror's Edge, I'm playing Mirror's Edge. It was the first thing I played when I got my Xbox One. First thing I played when I got my Xbox Series X, right? Like that is my test for okay.
Comfort food.
My comfort food, but also like let's see what this console does to this game that I absolutely love. Portal is another one of those where you put out another release of Portal, I'm gonna play it, right? Like it's such a playable game, but then also such a fun game, such a classic, such a an excellent game for revisiting. Also, like it never gets old, and so I'm all about this. And yeah, with Portal 2, I want them to do some sort of re-release of Portal 2. I would love a collection on modern consoles. Give me the Portal 1 plus 2 director's cut.
Yeah.
Sounds weird.
Yeah, but like you know what I mean. Like <an extra console. laughs> it looks like on Switch, it probably looks the exact same as it on PS3, if not worse.
It does, but it runs really surprisingly well for the Switch.
Yeah. Put it on Steam Deck, you know, a platform that's actually going to elevate it.
Because it's on Steam.
That's true. That is actually a really good point. It is on Steam Deck because it is on Steam. But like, give it a fucking cool ass remaster is what I'm saying. Like, let me play it at like fucking crazy ass settings and make it look wonderful on Steam Deck. That's what I want. Story number 9 to round out the Roper Report. Speaking of re-releases, Skyrim Anniversary Edition got a surprise release on Switch today. This comes from Ryan Lustin at IGN. Surprise! Skyrim Anniversary Edition just landed on Nintendo Switch. Nintendo has announced... I'm still laughing at the Portal 2 thing. I really can't just play it on my Steam Deck. Nintendo has announced that the Elder Scrolls V Skyrim Anniversary Edition is available now on the Nintendo eShop. A nice surprise for fans who want to play the classic RPG on the move. Isn't it wild that we're now calling Skyrim a classic RPG? That doesn't feel right.
I mean, damn.
It has been 11 years.
And like 15 releases.
Yeah, of Skyrim. 11 years since 11-11-11. That's wild. Quote, new quests, foes, weapons, and more await you in Tamriel, said Nintendo via Twitter. Quote, The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim Anniversary Edition is now out on hashtag Nintendo Switch. This is wild because this is the second time Skyrim has released on Switch.
Yeah.
They found a way to re-release
Skyrim.
They
found a way, dude. Good for them. Good for them. I'm proud of them. At some point, they're going to remake the game, you know, and then we're just going to get a bunch of those re-releases. Good for you, Skyrim. And then number 6 is going to come at some point.
At some point. What game has been re-released more between Skyrim and Resident Evil 4?
I think at this point it has to be Skyrim. Mm. Because Skyrim's playing that game of having the anniversary editions as well. That's just the normal ones. Whereas, like,
I mean, RE4 did come out on a platform like the previous gen before Skyrim. So it's had more releases.
Or yeah,
more,
you're right.
More chances, I mean, to release on more platforms.
But that's, I guess you're adding two there because it's PS2 and GameCube.
Yeah.
That this would be missing out on.
Because it came out on the Wii. I don't think Skyrim was out on the Wii.
You know what? You're right. It's probably RE4. Yeah. It's probably
kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong if you guys can do the data for us in like 2 minutes.
Because they both have VR versions.
Yeah. Is RE4 on Switch?
Yeah.
It is on Switch? Okay.
Uh-huh. But not my two versions.
This is like the what exists more in the world between, was it Wheels and Doors? I feel like this is the video game version of that. Of like what exists more with releases, RE4 or Skyrim? I'm going RE4.
Imran tweeted something about that that inspired me. What do you think you've done more, jumped or punched in a video game?
Jump.
Fuck.
I don't even think that's a question.
Well, when he says punched, like literally punch with my face,
attack,
like that doesn't
like attack button.
Because attack shooting, changes but... it. Mm-hmm. Like melee attack, because that changes it. Because I'm playing games like it. In Bloodborne, I can't jump. Right?
Exactly.
Like there are a lot of action games where I can't jump. That exactly. I'm hacking and slashing. I'm pressing the hell out of square. Whereas for jumps, if like jumps are more calculated. I'm not just tapping a jump button, right? Where I'm tapping an attack button. I might go attack over jump for this one.
I'm a jumpy boy.
You are a jumpy boy, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, I can't wait to see the next time either Skyrim and or RE4 get released for a brand new platform. But that release is just so far away. It's not. We're getting RE4 Remake next year. If I want to know what's coming out tomorrow,
you're right.
Today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Brewmaster for PC, Dwarf Romantic for Switch, Let's Build a Zoo for PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, Xbox One, and Switch, Moonbreaker for PC, Pathfinder, Wrath of the Righteous for Xbox Series X, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Switch. That's a gnarly name right there. Wrath of the Righteous. Hell yeah.
Yes.
We got Picross S8 for Switch, Valkyrie Elysium for PS5 and PS4, Bone Lab VR for PC, Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak Title Update 2 for PC and Switch, Sam & Max Beyond Time and Space Remastered for PS4, From Space for PC, Switch, and Stadia, RIP. Railgrade for PC and Switch. Carl for everything. That is Carl with like, it's like an acronym. C-A-R-L is out today for everything. Crossroads Inn for Switch. Let's Build a Zoo for everything. Martian Panic for Switch. I already said Pathfinder, right, Wrath of the Righteous.
You also already said Let's Build a Zoo as well.
Did I? Oh, sorry. Yeah. Some of these are copies. That's why yesterday I was trying to figure out like a better source to compile stuff. Because like I go to 4 different websites to figure out what this list is going to be. So I might do some copies every now and then. And then Undungeon is out today for everything. And then also we got a new episode of Kojima's podcast. This comes from a tweet from Jeff Keighley. This week on Brain Structure, a chat between Hideo Kojima and Jordan Peele. A fascinating conversation about creativity, defying audience expectations, and Jordan's favorite character from Metal Gear Solid 2. I had to put that in here because that sounds rad as hell.
Hell yeah, man.
I listened to the first episode, and let me tell you, I'm all the way in on this podcast. It's the perfect length. It's the
it's like 20 minutes. Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's fantastic stuff. Highly recommend people check it out. Yeah. Sakurai's YouTube channel as well, bless. I don't know if you've been watching.
Oh, no, I've not gotten to it yet.
It's great.
All right, I got to put that up. New dates for you. Scorn, the upcoming H.R. Giger-inspired puzzle adventure, is coming out earlier than expected. The game will now release on October 14th instead of October 21st. And then Vampire Survivors version 1.0 is releasing on October 20th. Deal of the day for you, Fallout 76. Prime Gaming October free games lineup is up. You are getting Fallout 76, Total War Warhammer 2, Middle-Earth Shadow of War, Glass, Masquerade Origins, and Loom. Not Doom. Loom. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Rewrite it and let us know what we got wrong. That's like, that was honestly what I was doing that because I was trying to build time for me to open up you're wrong, right? If you ever see me just stalling like that, that's because I'm doing a thing, right?
It's that or Slack notifications.
Yeah, I got to figure out how to get back into PS. I love you. Let's see here. And you're wrong. Let us know what we got wrong. Is it going wrong? Nano says Uncharted comes out on October 19th for PC. Editorializing. Triforce says Skyrim is not on the Wii. And then, oh man, okay. The Portland Kevin says, Blessing said he can't jump in Bloodborne, but it is possible to jump by sprinting and double tapping the dodge button. It is how you reach a number of secret areas in the game. That's a good point. I'll give you that. It's not like a traditional jump.
How often are you doing that, though?
If I'm trying to rush a place, I do it often, actually. If I'm trying to rush to a destination and I'm trying to dodge enemies, I'll do it quite often. Tomorrow's hosts for Kinda Funny Games Daily are going to be me and Tim. If you're watching this live on YouTube right now, after this, over on Twitch is a Kinda Funny Town Hall featuring Tim, Greg, and Joey talking about a bunch of changes coming to Kinda Funny. YouTube.com is Kinda Funny and YouTube.com is Kinda Funny Games and Patreon.com/both. And so... it is a must watch. Tune in. That's happening if you're watching live in 5 minutes on Twitch. If you're not watching live, for sure, check it out. It'll be on all our YouTube channels, I imagine. Tune into the update. Very important stuff. Very good stuff. Very exciting
stuff. Exciting stuff. Go over, hang out with us, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, pretty much right now.
Hell yeah. Remember, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.